Okay, please take your seats. We are going to resume the conference with this afternoon session. And our first speaker is Seamus Davis. Seamus, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you for the invitation. It's a joy to be here. My task this afternoon is to introduce the antagonism into this conference. Extremely pleasant. So I'm going to talk about internal microscopic structure of the density wave in the cuboids. I have to speak into the mic. It's hard to walk, though. All right. So here are my collaborators. The main work going on now is being done by Mohammed Hamidi and Steve Edkins. The development of some of the important new techniques that we use, especially for symmetry determination, was done in collaboration with my colleagues at Cornell. Subir Sachdev now plays a key role in guiding this program. Okay, so this was mentioned this morning, but let me mention it once again. There's clearly a sudden change in the structure of momentum space for the whole doped cuprates between here and there. That's a fact. In fact, that fact has been known for decades. Furthermore, in the last 5 years, it has become vividly obvious that there are some important broken symmetries down here at low doping, somewhere below so-called optimal doping and above perhaps 6-10%. Evidence from transport, from NMR experiments, and from different types of X-ray scattering that there are broken electronic symmetries in the underdoped cuprates. So, presumably our objective here, and I guess from the list of questions, it's not presumably, it's true. Our job is to determine what is the interplay between the pseudo-gap regime, the density wave, and the superconductivity. Ideally, that's what we'd like to know. And one thing that I think most people agree on now, certainly due to the fact that the density wave region takes up a small part of the pseudo-gap region, is that the density wave is not the cause of the pseudo-gap. On the other hand, it does appear likely that the density wave is some instability of the pseudo-gap state. So one would really like to understand how that instability comes about. And the third thing, which I emphasized this morning, I think it's really obvious, is that the zero-field density wave is not the cause of the quantum oscillations. There's no possibility, because we know the shape of momentum space at B equals zero, and it is not for small electron pockets. Okay. So here's how our system works. We have this machine called spectroscopic imaging STM. It's a machine with which you can image basically the density of electronic states resolved by space with subatomic resolution and resolved by energy here in 2 millivolt steps, but we can get down to a few tens of microvolts now. So we can directly determine the real space electronic structure. By taking the Fourier transforms and judicious analysis, one can determine some important things about the momentum space electronic structure simultaneously. And so there are several key things about this technique which are useful for the problem we're dealing with right now in the underdoped cuprates. One is we get real space and momentum space simultaneously. Second is, if we're serious, we can get energy resolution down to a few tens of microvolts, but typically we use millivolt, 1 millivolt. We can access both the filled and the empty states, and this system works just fine up to very high magnetic fields. So here's the characteristic signal we deal with in the cuprates. This is the Fourier transform resolved by energy of the density of states in underdoped BISCO. And if I run this movie, it'll start from high energies. Let's wait till it gets down to zero. Wait till the number here gets down to zero. Here, so these guys are Bogoliubov quasiparticles, and at a certain energy, they all stop dispersing and leave us with modulations in the electronic structure, which have a characteristic wave vector, but which do not change in energy. So in terms of a graph, if I graph the wave vector of different modulations, they're changing with energy as they should for D-wave, for Bogoliubov quasiparticles of a D-wave superconductor. And suddenly, at some energy, they make a transition to 2 non-dispersive Q vectors. That's actually been well known now in the STM community for about a decade. Like I said, This is a well-known fact, and we have all worked using our technique to try and understand this state. Now, recently, we were able to introduce something which turned out to be extremely important. Now we can look inside each unit cell. We can put about 50 pixels inside each unit cell. And furthermore, we can resolve the spatial phase. This is not the quantum phase, it's the spatial phase relative to the lattice. So we can distinguish wave functions which are modulating in phase with the lattice from wave functions which are modulating out of phase with the lattice. Or another way to put that is we can see the real and imaginary component of any modulation. Now, the way we do that is kind of tricky. I'd be happy to explain it to anybody, but it involves making these images and the image of the electronic structure perfectly periodic in real space, so that in reciprocal space, each Bragg peak is a single pixel. That's the starting point for the machinery. Once we have that, once you know where the origin is, I forgot that, so in STM, you, unlike scattering, you know where the origin is. So you can determine the real and the imaginary part of the wave functions, and you can resolve that by energy. This is new information, which really was not available from any scattering probe. It doesn't look too impressive here, but let me tell you, for example, you can measure symmetries. You can make absolute measurement of broken symmetry using this technique. So, for example, you can find a broken rotational symmetry inside the unit cell by determining whether the amplitude of one real Bragg peak is different than the other real Bragg peak. If that number is not zero, then you definitely have an emetic state. If there's inversion breaking, the amplitude of both of these guys should be different from zero. And in this talk, I'm going to use this technique to determine the symmetry of the form factor of the cuprate density wave. Okay. So now here's an image of the surface of one of these crystals. Each white dot is a bismuth atom on the surface of BISCO. Directly underneath it is the apical oxygen atom. Directly underneath that is the copper atom. So we know where every copper atom is, and by deduction, we know where every oxygen atom in the plane is in this image. Okay, so simultaneous with this image, we take an image of the broken symmetry states. Here they are. And you can already see something very interesting. There's a lot more contrast, not contrast, there's a lot more detail in this image than there is in this image. This one looks like it's much more finely weaved. And it is, because here, most of the contrast is on the oxygen sites, whereas the oxygen sites are more or less undetectable in this image. So we can take the Fourier transform and then analyze the phenomena which are associated with the Q vector of the density wave, which clearly is not very coherent. By the way, I also think that when the day comes when it's possible to see the density wave in YBCO, it's also going to look just like this, just as disordered. So you can look at this thing in detail. It breaks translational and rotational symmetry. See, that's a rotational symmetry breaking. It also breaks translational symmetry breaking, but the correlation length is very short, maybe 20 to 24 unit cells. So here's another little patch, here's a little patch, etc. So we know that this isn't one particular property of BISCO by comparison with other materials. A very different material has a virtually identical density wave phenomenology. And the other thing we know by zooming in very carefully on these images of the broken symmetry is that the action is on the oxygen atoms. That's a copper atom. You can see this oxygen and that oxygen are in a different state than this oxygen and that oxygen. And it turns out, it took us a while to figure that out, but it turns out that that's true everywhere in the image. There's a broken rotational symmetry inside the unit cell. It's broken down from 90 degree C4 to 180 degree C2 broken symmetry. And then that broken symmetry is itself modulated. Kind of elementary pattern we see here, and the one I know that Subir was motivated to pursue, and we pursued it for a long time, but we didn't succeed in understanding it, is this object. And it does look like a little stripe. It's four unit cells wide. It's unidirectional. But it seems to have a lot of internal contrast that we didn't understand. Now, starting around 06, when it first became possible to do these experiments, people started to think about a density wave which has a d-symmetry form factor, whether that could and should exist in the cuprates. So here's a picture of the CuO2 plane, copper. Now, we call this oxygen here OX, the X oxygen. We call this oxygen here OY. Keep that in mind. Now, this thing doesn't break any symmetries. Now, the first symmetry I can break is rotational symmetry inside the unit cell. So let's label the OX and OYs as being different. So now OX has a lower value and OY has a higher value. And now this is the pattern that you see in the image. If you take the Fourier transform, there's no modulation, so you won't see any modulation inside the first Brillouin zone. You just see the Bragg peaks. But we have phase-resolved Fourier transform, so we can determine the sign of the Bragg peak. One of them will be positive, and the other one will be negative, because this object has a d-symmetry. Okay, now this thing is a d-symmetry form factor density wave. Really hard to understand just by looking at it. So let's break it down into pieces. First thing we'll look at is the OYs. So imagine that the value on OY is modulating from minimum to maximum to minimum over some distance. And just for convenience here, I made it 4 unit cells. It doesn't have to be 4 unit cells, but imagine it modulates minimum, maximum, minimum on OY. Keep that in mind. Now consider modulation on OX. If OX goes from maximum, minimum to maximum, then the modulation on OX is pi out of phase with the modulation on OY, even though it has the same wave vector. So now you can take the Fourier transform of the OY modulations. If they go maximum, minimum, maximum, the amplitude looks like this. The Fourier transform for the modulation peak has a certain sign. Now if I take the Fourier transform of OX, instead of going maximum, minimum, maximum, it goes minimum, maximum, minimum. It's pi out of phase. If I take the Fourier transform of this guy, I'll see the modulation peaks, but they'll have the opposite sign on this sublattice than they did on that sublattice. Now let's add those two things back together to make the real image. If I add OX plus OY to make a D-form factor density wave, I'll add those two Fourier transforms. And very interestingly, the main modulation peak disappears because the two components are out of phase with each other. Basically, this density wave just does this. It just modulates through space like this. So when you take the Fourier transform of that dance, you get zero. Okay. Now, another interesting thing you could do is you could add this image to that image. And if you did, you'd cancel all the Bragg satellite peaks and you'd amplify the main density wave peaks. So an image of OX minus OY measured at the density wave peak, modulation peak, is the key thing you need to measure if you're searching for a d-symmetry density wave.
Hey, but you said add, you meant subtract.
Pardon?
You said add, but you meant subtract.
Subtract. Add them if you want to see nothing. Subtract them if you want to see the d-symmetry density wave. And now in a real material, you have domains pointing in two directions. So in the added one, you get nothing in the first Brillouin zone. In the subtracted one, you get the signal of the d-symmetry density wave. I call that capital D for the rest of the talk. All right, now let's look for that thing. Oh, we were motivated to do this, and I think Subir was motivated to contact us to do this. By this beautiful paper by Comina et al. From Andrea De Micheli's group, where they used X-ray scattering, modeled their X-ray scattering, in an attempt to distinguish between S on the copper sites, S prime, which is, and D, the D symmetry density wave that I just described to you. And they reported a positive result in 2 cuprates from that experiment. So here's an image of one of our images of the electronic structure, okay? And it's sublattice phase resolved. We have lots of data inside each unit cell, and we know the phase of every pixel. So we can extract from this image the value on every OX site, and from the same image, the value on every OY site. Then take the Fourier transform. They're not very prepossessing. They're not very interesting. But now what we're going to do is either add or subtract these two sublattice images. So if I add the two images, I get this mess. And if I subtract the two images, you see the density wave quite vividly with your own eyes. You should be able to see it quite clearly in that measure of d-symmetry. In any case, if I take the Fourier transform here of the measure of the d-symmetry order parameter, it's in excellent agreement with the theoretical prediction. It's exactly what we're looking for. We demonstrated that the same thing exists in another completely different cuprate. So this is not a technique-dominated result. It exists in multiple cuprates. Oh, and Jenny Hoffman told me last week that she has the same result in another cuprate now. So we know we're on the right track. Furthermore, we can, you know, quantify how predominant the d-symmetry form factor for the density wave is, and it's between 10 and 20 times stronger than the other effects at the modulation wave vector of the density wave. So it's completely predominant. And finally, these strange images, these strange unidirectional objects that we could never understand, now we understand them quite clearly. What they are is a unidirectional d-symmetry density wave which is modulating horizontally and which is translationally invariant vertically. So here's a cartoon of what the values on the different sites would look like. If you smooth that image, you'll get something like this. This is in excellent agreement with what's observed. So we're pretty confident that the state under that density wave dome in the underdoped cuprates, at least the ones we can look at, is a d-symmetry density wave. Now, this thing has an impact on the topology of momentum space, which is very interesting. The change between this Fermi arc and this complete Fermi surface topology. Of course, there are many, many experiments that show that there are broken symmetries in this part of the phase diagram and that the critical temperature for the symmetry breaking is tending to zero somewhere here. I've just listed some of them here. So it's not a surprise that something happens here. But in our technique, we can look at the density wave and the momentum space structure simultaneously. So we did that using this Fourier transform STM technique. There's a simple way of determining where the Fermi surface is by using one of the Q vectors, the one that crosses the middle of the reciprocal unit cell. We just measure that Q vector, divide by two, and it tells us where the Fermi surface is. And so Fujita-san was able to map the doping dependence of the coherent Fermi surface of BISCO. Yes, here's the doping. You'll see the Fermi arc moving with changing doping. And at a certain doping, bam, the complete Fermi surface appears. It's very, very sudden change. Even if you didn't like the kind of processed version of the data, this is completely unprocessed raw data. This is Fourier transform STM in the density wave region under the dome, and this is Fourier transform STM on the overdoped side. It looks exactly like what you would expect from a textbook D-wave BCS result. So there's a sudden change in the k-space topology at around 19%. When we study the density waves from the identical samples, we found that the density wave and the broken d-symmetry form factor effects, because there's another effect, they both diminish and they disappear near 20%. So under here, there's a simultaneous disappearance of the broken symmetry and change in the Fermi surface topology, which is really an interesting and nice result. Okay, now, what we've been doing for the last few months, what Mohammed Hamidian has been doing, is to determine the microscopic electronic structure of this stuff. And this is motivated by, there's been an enthusiastic burst of creativity from our theory colleagues trying to understand what mechanism could be producing a d-symmetry form factor density wave under the dome in the cuprates. There is just no time for me to review the commonalities and the distinctions between these theories, but the material that we're trying to determine in the experiments is designed to help us understand which elements of these models are correct. Oh, here's another round of even more recent ones on the same subject. So, what things would we like to know? So one thing we would like to know, Steve brought this up this morning, we'd like to know if there's a characteristic energy gap associated with this density wave, as one might expect in a cartoon-like picture of a density wave, a 1D Pyrrhos density wave. Mixing between particles and holes opens a gap, and that gap is what's the mean field energy gap of the density wave. We'd like to know, does that exist in the electronic structure of the underdoped cuprates? Second thing is we'd like to identify the k-space states contributing to the d-form factor spectral weight. In this simple model, those k-space states, of course, would be these ones and those ones. The q-vector of the density wave would be the difference between here and there. Another important thing we'd like to know is the symmetry relating the modulations above and below the Fermi energy. When you're looking at the eigenstates, you could look at the eigenstates here in real space, or you could look at the eigenstates there in real space. In order to save energy, they're pi out of phase with each other. Mixing particles and holes produces modulations which are pi out of phase with each other between the filled states and the empty states. And then specific to the cube rates, we'd like to know checkerboard or domains. We'd like to know what's the relationship to the pseudo gap and the superconductivity. So let's take one of our images. This is the D symmetry image, OX minus OY. Take the Fourier transform. Now we have two Q vectors. Take the inverse Fourier transform, take the amplitude of this modulation to one image and the amplitude of that modulation to another image. That tells how much modulation is going in the X direction and how much is going in the Y direction. Okay, now we'd like to find out, are they somehow related to each other? Are they separated into domains? So a simple measure for that is to take the amplitude in the X direction minus the amplitude in the Y direction divided by the average value. So we color coded this thing. When it's signed positively, the modulation should be going in one direction. And when it's signed negatively, the modulation should be going in the other direction. Now you could ask me, is this all just a fantasy of Fourier analysis? But I can overlay this mask on top of the raw data. And when you do that, you see it works beautifully. What you have here is regions which are unidirectional and primarily modulating in one direction. And then you have other regions which are also unidirectional, but they're primarily modulating in the 90 degree opposite direction. So for the, and this is also true in oxychloride. So for the question, is it a checkerboard or is it unidirectional domains? In the cases we can see, it's unidirectional domains. And that's consistent with Andrea's analysis of the shape of the Bragg peaks from X-ray scattering. So second thing we can do is we can try and figure out, does this thing have an energy gap? There is a characteristic energy in the problem, which is the pseudo gap energy, whose value we know very well from the spectrum. So what we can do is extract the measure of d-symmetry from the data as a function of energy and determine at which energy does the d-symmetry become maximum. So here's the result of that very interesting experiment. All the d-symmetry should be at 4 points inside here. You see there's very little at low energies. But as we go up in energy, when we get about halfway to the pseudo-gap energy, these d-symmetry modulations start to become intense. And when we reach the pseudo-gap energy, they are completely predominant. The characteristic energy associated with the eigenfunctions in the D form factor density wave of the cube rates is the pseudo-gap energy. Okay, so that's a summary of that situation. The peak in intensity of the D-symmetry modulations is really on the pseudo-gap energy. The other thing we can do is compare the these are empty states and filled states. Take the Fourier transform, and now instead of taking the amplitude, take the phase, because we have the phase information. So these modulations have this spatial variation of phase, these modulations have this spatial variation, and they're in the same field of view, but at opposite energies. So we can just compare the phase of every pixel here with the equivalent pixel here, and do that as a function of energy. And when we do that, what we find is that there's no phase difference at low energies, and when we approach the pseudo-gap energy, there's a sudden sharp change in phase difference so that the empty states are modulating pi out of phase with the filled states. So that's the third fact that we've been able to glean. Fourth one you've heard before, but let me say it again. We have published it half a dozen times. The Q vector of the modulations, and here it's specifically the D-symmetry modulations, is changing with doping. It's changing with doping on the same trajectory as the vector, scattering vector, between the ends of the arcs. And these are not theoretical arcs, they're simultaneously measured arcs from Fourier transform STM. So these things are moving on the same trajectory. Okay, so here is my summary of the microscopic structure of the cube rate d-symmetry density wave. Its intensity of the modulations is peaked at the pseudo gap energy. We take that, maybe the pseudo-gap energy is not the mean field gap of a pyrrhals-like density wave. I don't know about that. But the amplitude of the eigenstates, which have d-symmetry form factor density wave, is concentrated on the pseudo-gap energy. These states are pi out of phase for their filled versus empty values. And the phenomena in momentum space, which are controlling the Q vector of the density wave, is the distance between the tip of these arcs of coherent states in momentum space. And as the doping changes, this measured, directly measured difference changes on the trajectory shown here. And so with that, we came to the preliminary conclusion, up for discussion at this very exciting meeting, that the simplest way to explain this situation would be to have particle-hole interactions about some momentum space, Fermi surface, at 8 Poincaré. Subir didn't want me to say hotspots because that word has baggage. So I said Poincaré. And then the characteristic energy gap of this thing is the pseudo gap. Thank you very much.